This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler, hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come warm yourself by the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. I have to tell you, I have been walking on air for the last 24-plus hours. Before my shift hosting Coast to Coast AM last night, I attended a very powerful, deeply moving, inspiring spiritual event up in Vaughan, which is north of Toronto for our American listeners. Jonathan Kahn, Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, a dear friend of this program. He's been with us many times, most recently to talk about his new book, The Paradigm. He's also been with me on Coast. And he was speaking at the Vaughan Community Church, which was an event hosted by Rabbi Jeff Foreman with City of David, along with Rabbi Andrew Zeidman at Rosh Pinah. And it was packed, I tell you. Jonathan was speaking about the mystery of the Jubilee. And at the end of the event, he sounded the shofar, you know, the ram's horn, four times. And I don't know what to tell you other than I certainly felt God's presence in that packed room. I know a lot of people did. I had a chance to duck backstage and say hi to Jonathan. Truly a remarkable man. And if you get a chance, log onto YouTube and search Jonathan Kahn, C-A-H-N. He made a speech or delivered a speech to members of Congress. I'm not sure when this was, a couple of years ago, I think. Again, very inspirational, a powerful and a very courageous speech, given the times in which we live. Check it out. A very controversial new documentary currently in production. It's called The Myth is Canada. And I'm reading here from the website at NephilimFilms.com. This film will expose the misguided belief systems the people of Canada hold about the Canadian federal and provincial governments. The documentary will expose an ongoing deception and will bring a solution to the people of Canada. Excuse me, I'm just overcome here with emotion. To the people of Canada to overcome this deception so as to bring a prosperous and bright future for all the people of Canada. Independent filmmaker and executive producer of this feature-length doc, Doug Force, will be joining me for the full 2 hours, which... requires a bit of a programming note. If you've been on the website strangeplanet.ca, you're probably wondering what happened to Jeff Worster, the co-founder and president of the Center for Deep Political Research, was to join us in the second hour to discuss JFK versus the deep state. Of course, as we approach the 54th anniversary of the murder of the 35th president, but Jeff has a medical emergency at this hour. And I won't go into further details. I just want to tell Jeff, if he happens to be listening, or his publicist, all of us here at The Conspiracy Show, sending out our healing prayers to you and your family at a very difficult time. We hope to get Jeff back on the show real soon. So But we are, having said that, delighted that Doug Forrest will join us for the full 2 hours. It really deserves the full 2 hours. Next week on the program, Billy Carson will be with us to discuss the secret space program, and our good friend, media scientist, McLuhanite, Nelson Thal, on synthetic clones and doubles. This should be good. Nelson is always full value. We always enjoy when he stops by. Let me introduce the boys in the band on the Gibson Flying V guitar. Ian Robertson, who is soon flying off to Los Angeles to record a record album. And then he'll forget all about his friends here on The Conspiracy Show. He's actually nodding. Yes, I will. He says, I am going Hollywood. No, it's not going to happen. Ian is just too grounded. No, the album will happen, Ian. I'm just saying, you're not going to allow that depraved Hollywood, to infect you.
You're
because
getting backed into a corner here, further and further.
What's that?
You're getting backed into a corner here.
No. You're such a solid individual, and I know that you're not going to be affected by that nonsense out in La La Land. That's all I'm saying.
Aw, thank you.
So just go out there, make a great record, and then come right back. All right?
Can do.
Promise. All right. And on the Rickenbacker bass guitar, and occasionally the theremin, the mysterious Albert Wenzel, my story producer. And, you were at a, bring your microphone over there, Albert. You were at some sort of a psychic testing facility this past weekend, weren't you?
That's how I spent my Saturday afternoon. It was here in Toronto. It was part of IONS.
What is IONS? What does that stand for?
The Institute of Noetic Sciences. It's okay. The one with Dean Radin. But we were doing like a study on unconditional love and precognition. So like they're hoping their results are better when they hypnotize you to feel unconditional love. Then you should be able to perceive things better. And, all is connected and all is one. But I was hoping really for more real world applications, like stuff where you can solve real world problems. But this, like a lot of it was sort of guessing like a pea and a walnut and things like that.
Like a shell game?
Yeah, the Xena cards.
This was an app. So, yes, it's the equivalent of the Xena cards where you have to – is it a star? Is it a wavy line? Is it a triangle? I mean, that's normally how they assess psychic ability, right?
Yeah.
But they didn't do that. They just – okay, so they've updated it, and now it's on an app.
Right.
And the idea was after they – so they give you a baseline. How did you do in the baseline?
I think I'm the opposite of what his hypothesis was. I think his hypothesis would be that once you're hypnotized, you do the same three tests again, and your results should be better. And I think my results went down. but the first
nothing about you, Albert, is sort of typical. So I'm not surprised. You don't need to go there to receive unconditional love. You have it here, my friend.
Oh, well, exactly. Yeah.
All right. And finally, on the Hammond B3 feature producer and our YouTube live stream producer, Ryan White. Of course, Albert also on the other live stream. And glad to have you all here as always. All right. Oh, and my little guy in the other room, North, who is learning to become a technical producer. He's learning at the knee of Ian Robertson. All right, let's get down to business, shall we? In his feature-length documentary film, Doug Force makes the case that Canada, listen closely now, Canada is not a lawfully established country. It's not a sovereign country. We are not citizens. We are chattel in a crown-owned corporation. In the film, Doug interviews former governor generals. Is it governor generals or governors general? We'll ask him about that. Lieutenant governors, various Canadian politicians, constitutional attorneys, and federal and provincial judges. Doug Force is a Canadian, many generations Canadian, a bit of a history buff, to say the least. He started researching the history of Canada a number of years ago, putting together the broader context of what is Canada. He serves as writer, director, researcher, and executive producer at Nephilim Films. Doug Force, welcome to The Conspiracy Show. It's been quite a while.
It has been, Richard, and thank you very much for having me back, a third time.
My pleasure. We talked about the idea for this documentary many years ago, so this has been a long road for you, and that is typical. I mean, people need to understand, in film and television, it takes a long time from when you put the idea down on paper to its actual, to the actual fruition. So where is the myth is Canada at right now in terms of its production?
Well, we have to actually haven't entered production at all, Richard. We're actually into crowdfunding. We're up on Indiegogo. We'll be on there for the next three to four weeks. Mm-hmm. Then we're also doing the funding up through the website itself. Indiegogo has kind of restricted people to credit card use only, so we've had to allow for PayPal and e-transfer, et cetera, on through the website to help us with the crowdfunding on this. And we're picking up momentum, and I really appreciate you having me on your show tonight. Thank you very much. And it's kind of a treat now to do another 2 hours with you. The last time we did this was in 2008 when you were on another radio station.
Ah, there you go. It's been that long. Okay, well, we're delighted to have you back. And people, again, can go to NephilimFilms.com, N-E-P-H-A-L-E-M, films.com, and in the About section, they'll notice another recent guest on the Conspiracy Show. He was also with me on Coast to Coast, and that's Alan Park as part of your team. I'm not telling tales out of school. He's on the website, right?
That's true. Absolutely correct.
Wow, you've got quite a talent pool there at Nephilim Films. All right, so let's get to the premise here of the film, and that is that Canada is not a lawfully established country. Now, I know you include on the website kind of an interesting timeline that sort of breaks it down year by year. But just what is it? Give us kind of an overarching idea, but what you mean when you say we are not Canada, that is not a lawfully established country. What does that mean?
Well, Canada, they would have you believe, confederated in 1867. We're celebrating 150 years of this so-called confederation. The problem that we have with that and that statement is that I would ask the politicians simply, where are the Articles of Confederation? When did the people and provinces ratify these articles? And, it's that simple. And they don't have them. As a matter of fact, in 1982, 100 plus years of Confederation, Pierre Elliott Trudeau decided that it was time to put a constitution together for Canada. And he went to a foreign government through a foreign queen, and they passed an act in a foreign parliament that he brought back to Canada that was supposedly to be the constitution for Canada, hence making it a sovereign nation. Why would he have to do that in 1982 if it was already confederated in 1867?
Interesting.
So there's all these signs out there, Richard, that show that what they're telling you on one side is a fiction, and what they're doing on the other side is raping and pillaging while you're not paying attention.
I certainly want to get into that, because in the trailer or the teaser for the documentary, The Myth is Canada, and again, the website, NephilimFilms.com, you include a snippet from a news report back in 2016. Someone is reporting on the income disparity or the concentration of wealth in Canada, and they announced that 10%, the top 10% of Canadians own 50% of the wealth, and so presumably that has been achieved only because, again, we are all being deceived. This is not we are not a sovereign country. We are not citizens. We're chattel in a corporation. But I'm wondering how much of this has to do with the fact that we are, cards on the table. I'm not a fan of parliamentary democracy. I mean, this is the country that we live in, and I love Canada and so forth. But I've always been more of a fan of at least the idea, the concept. It doesn't live out this way, but the idea of a limited democracy, a constitutional republic. We're coming up on a break. When we come back, I just want to maybe get your sense of whether this is peculiar to parliamentary democracies. For example, is Australia a lawfully established country, or do we all remain essentially colonies of Great Britain? And are we all sort of chattel underneath the Queen, Queen Elizabeth? Doug Forrest, executive producer, director, writer, researcher at NephilimFilms.com, and the feature-length documentary, they're now in the crowdfunding phase, is called The Myth is Canada. Canada. This is The Conspiracy Show. My name is Richard Serrett.
The owners of the system are asleep. Now we can play. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Take a look around. What do you really see? This is where you can tell all about it. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Doug Force is with us, executive producer of a feature-length documentary film in pre-production. They're crowdfunding. We'll tell you more details. And it's called The Myth is Canada. And the synopsis really is Canada is not a lawfully established country. We are not a sovereign country. We are essentially a corporation, one large crown-owned corporation. And the politicians are basically the board of directors, I suppose. Doug Force serves as writer, researcher, director, and executive producer. Again, The Myth is Canada. So before the break, Doug, how much of this has to do with just the parliamentary system and the fact that we are or were colonies of Great Britain?
Well, and that's just it, Richard. They've 1931, through the Statute of Westminster, that voided the British North American Act and ended Great Britain's reign on Canada as a colony, and allowed it to confederate and allowed it to seat a constitutional government. What happened is that the people that were in Ottawa didn't want to give up their power to the people of Canada. And instead, they pretended like nothing changed. And so today, we have what they call a de facto government, or an unlawful and illegal government. But because we, the people of Canada, have not understood what's going on around us, we have consented to that jurisdiction and to that government. And the problem we have is that all the provinces are sovereign nations unto themselves, with de facto governments as today running them, when all we need to do, and it's quite simple, René Lévesque in 1976 got a letter from a gentleman by the name of Walter Cool that's up on the website. When Walter explained to René that he didn't need to separate from Canada because you can't have a divorce without first having a marriage, and hence hold a constitutional convention in Quebec and seat a de jure government, and that's all you need to do.
So explain the difference between a de facto government, which is what you say we have in all 10 provinces and territories, and federally we have de facto governments, but what we want is a government de jure. Explain
Correct.
The difference.
And a de facto government is a government, the way that the government here in Canada was created, it is that they just usurped the power of the people and went to a foreign monarch, the Queen of England, and asked her to go into her parliament so that they could pass a legislative charter called the Charter of Rights and Freedoms in 1982 that incorporated that entity. And Pierre Elliott Trudeau, if you recall what was said on the news back in 1982, patriated that constitution. In other words, he took it to Canada for the first time. Not repatriated, by the way. And in doing so, it bamboozled the people into believing that they had the right to govern. And in reality, they had no right to do so. By taking a foreign corporation and pretending to be the government of Canada, and then with the subcorps pretending to be the provincial governments, they have usurped control away from we, the people of Canada, and kept it for themselves.
And when you say themselves, who do you mean? Whoever is prime minister, who is ever in the prime minister's office, who's ever in cabinet?
Oh, it goes beyond the politicians. Themselves would be, if you look at the history of England, and you look at the House of Lords over there, and the very very court of the Queen, et cetera, and the owners of that corporation are them. They own the corporation that was incorporated in 1982 by the UK Parliament. The politicians are just paid shills. They get their They get their salaries for life. They get health care for life. They get all of their family well taken care of for life. And they get to take as much of the taxpayer money as they can steal while they're in power. I mean, what a quick example was that, what was his name, Paul Martin,
yes,
back in 1992, he owned the Canadian Steamship Company. And in order for him to make some changes when he was finance minister, the IMF came to him and said, make some changes. He granted himself a $100 million grant of taxpayer money to put into the Canadian Steamship Company so he could change the flag to Liberian flag and get the ships refitted.
We have to say that happened allegedly, right? I mean, we can't say that happened. How do we know that happened?
Well, actually, he admits to it.
He admits he took $100 million from the IMF?
No, he didn't. He doesn't admit he took it. He says it was granted. It was a grant given to him for the Canadian Steamship Company. But that's just, you know, a person in power who can grant himself. You know, when you apply for a grant through the government,
right,
and you can get monies, that's not a loan that they give you. It's monies that they give you to do certain things with in your sciences or your
sure.
In
so
art,
you're
etc.,
saying that
etc.
he received a $100 million grant from the IMF.
Not from the IMF, from the Canadian taxpayer.
From the Canadian taxpayer. I'm sorry. In exchange for what? What?
Well, the IMF came to him and said, you know, in the finance, he was finance minister at the time.
Yes.
He said, you're making an embarrassment of the healthcare systems around the world. It turns out that Canada's healthcare system was very, very well run, and it was run profitably. And the IMF said, you're embarrassing the United States, you're embarrassing England, France, and the rest of the world that has a healthcare system. What we'd like you to do is start cutting beds and increasing the administration. Cut jobs and beds and increase your administration, which is what he did. And he took a very efficient system back in 1992 to what it is today, where there's lineups now for elective surgery. There's lineups now going into pretty much any emergency ward on any night of the week. And that was, if you recall back in the late 80s and early 90s, you used to be able to go to emergency and get taken care of right away. If you had problems that you needed an operation, you were usually, there was no waiting time.
Mm.
But now all that has changed. The administration is very top-heavy, while as the rest of the
Well, one could argue that is simply the nature of socialized medicine. All government agencies become these synthetic beasts, and they just tend to. I mean, there's only two other jurisdictions in the world that have a similar health care system, and that's North Korea and Cuba, as far as I know.
Well, and at the time when he did this, we had been running our health care system since the 1960s,
right,
very efficiently and profitably. And it was still for everybody. But after that, within a few years of him getting his grant and changing the way that healthcare system was going to be run, it started to run inefficiently. It is today now very inefficient. Now, if he would have left it alone, we would have still had one of the top healthcare systems in the world.
How do we know about this edict that came from the IMF? How did you find out about that?
Actually, he actually said it in an interview a very long time ago. I had been watching an old documentary, and he had actually mentioned the IMF, and in 1992 had a chat with him. And I always thought that was funny because he didn't actually say that the IMF said you need to change your healthcare system, but if you follow what happened after the IMF had their chat. And go on to see how he got his grant of $100 million, and the healthcare system then started to get administratively heavy, and the beds were being closed. There was hospitals being closed. I was out in Vancouver at that time, and they closed three hospitals from 1992 through 1994. Very large hospitals that were run very efficiently.
Well, there's no question. You know, we have serious problems with just long-term sustainability. With many aspects of our social safety net. Let's put it that way. But let's get back to the premise that Canada is not a country. If we're not a sovereign country, then we are citizens. We are not citizens. We are, I described as chattel of a corporation. Is that a fair analogy?
Only if you consent to that jurisdiction. We are actually a landmass with sovereign individuals. Every human being on the landmass, known as Canada, is actually a sovereign individual. We don't have a de jure government, and hence we have a pirate ship, for lack of a better term, controlling our day-to-day. And that's the sad part of this. And in the movie, what we're going to expose is just that and how it came about. But more than that, Richard, we're actually going to show for the last half hour, 40 minutes of the movie, how the individual can change that, how we can seat a de jure government in each of the provinces, how we can all come together and do that. And then if over time, once the de jure governments are seated in each province, if they want to create a federal authority from that, then the people of Canada can actually create a federal authority for Ottawa if they want to. And once again, that would be done through a constitutional convention and then seating a de jure federal authority.
How would that change? We go to the polls every 4+ years. We elect members of parliament.
Right.
They promise us one thing, and then they largely ignore us in between elections. That's pretty standard, you know, from country to country around the world. How would things differ if we had, instead of a de facto government, as you refer to them, and we had a government de jure? I mean, I'm just trying to place myself in the minds of our listeners saying, okay, de facto, de jure, what difference does it make? A politician is a politician.
Well, actually, under a de jure government, the politician is only elected by the people, and if he fails to initiate the people's mandate, there would be safeguards built within that constitution to ensure that he is relieved of his position, and then a by-election would be called, and another politician would be put in his position, would be put in his place. Today, as you know, the politicians, once elected, they're under no obligation to follow anything that they've said to get elected, or to listen to their constituents once elected if it goes against what they want to do.
There have been examples, mm-hmm. Where we have, for example, provincial parties where we have a very strong grassroots underneath that, underneath the sort of the party apparatus or informing party platforms and party policy. If you join the Conservative Party, the provincial Conservative Party, and you attend meetings and so forth, and you get involved in the process. Maybe I'm being naive here, where else? Show me where else in the world an elected member is responsible to his constituents after he's elected. And I think most people the world over feel that that they are largely ignored.
United States of America, in all 48 states, in the lower 48 states, they can recall the politicians, and if they're not following the mandate of the people. It's not done very often because of the big there's only two political party systems down there at this time.
Yeah, they tried to recall the governor of Wisconsin, and it didn't work out. You're right. I mean, we have seen that, at least the attempt. But aren't there provinces here that have recall? Doesn't Alberta have a recall mechanism?
Actually, I'm trying to find the case right now that was actually in Alberta.
Yeah.
And the courts ruled against the people, saying that the politician had no standing.
Right.
I'm sorry, that the people had no standing to tell the politician what to do after he was elected.
Well, that's an interesting point because you mentioned the courts. And, if you look in the United States with the judiciary, and many of the appellate courts are incredibly liberal, after 8 years of a Democratic president, he has that. I mean, that's the greatest that's the greatest power of a president, really, is to appoint Supreme Court judges, appellate court judges that could sit and change and inform policy for a generation. Where we have seen, for example, ballot initiatives in places like California, I mean, I don't want to get political here, but this, I'm citing this as an example. In California, they voted for a ballot initiative, recognizing sort of the sanctity of a woman and a man getting married. That was the will of the people in this ballot initiative. And again, I'm not making a commentary one way or the other. I'm citing it as an example, and the courts overturned that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know what would change. Okay, so we would have the ability to recall an MLA or a member of provincial parliament, as we call them in Ontario. What else would change?
Well, you've got to understand something here, Richard, that the Constitution that would be created by the will of the people. And if the will of the people says that if a politician doesn't follow what the will of the people is, then he should be recalled, or it will be recalled, and he will lose his status as a politician.
Right.
And so these are all things that can be put into a Constitution.
Sure.
Whatever is put into the Constitution through constitutional conventions is the will of the people at the time that that is happening. We can go on for the next 3 or 4 hours talking about all the various things that we can place in a constitution. And I usually say to people, I say, look, if you're looking to find a good example of a constitution, it's not a perfect example,
right,
but a good example of a constitution is the one in the United States.
Right. Oh, I agree. I agree. In principle, it's one of the shining documents of human history.
Exactly. And where it starts off with the three most important words, we the people.
Mm. Interesting, yes.
And that's the beautiful thing of that. Now, the federal constitution is to match all the states' constitutions. Now, they did make errors. They allowed the United States to have two jurisdictions of law within its constitution, one constitutional common law and the other admiralty. And in 1878, they shifted the constitutional common law government into a constitutional admiralty government. And hence, it's been going downhill ever since. And this is why you get the courts being stacked with people that will work in favor of bigger government, but against the will of the people.
Right, right.
And so that's something that I'm actually, I address that in a documentary I was working on down there. It was called Bamboozled, The Reseating of the Republic, a number of years ago, and then I was asked to leave because they didn't particularly want that information to go out to the 330 million.
All right, Doug, hold on. We've got the music coming up, which means it's just time to step away for a moment, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about the Canadian Constitution. Doug says it's not a constitution because it constitutes nothing. We'll find out what that means. Doug Force, NephilimFilms.com. And the documentary is called The Myth is Canada. Back with more of The Conspiracy Show. Don't go away.
In a democracy, we elect officials so we can sleep at night. So why are you up? 416-360-0740 or toll free at 1-866-740-4740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Doug Force is with us, executive producer of The Myth is Canada. They are in the crowdfunding phase, pre-production, I suppose. And the synopsis of the hypothesis, really, of this documentary is that Canada is not a lawfully established country, and we are essentially adrift, sort of caught between. We used to be a colony, but the Constitution was not ratified by the people, so it's essentially been, the whole system has been hijacked. And so when the Prime Minister, for example, swears allegiance to the Queen and not the people of Canada, does that mean that that we are essentially owned by the Crown?
We're not owned by anybody.
We're not owned by anybody. Okay.
Ideally, I mean, I can get into the intricacies of how they bamboozled.
Doug, let me just jump in. Are you on a hands-free? Could I get you? If so, could you pick up the handset?
I'm sorry.
There we go. 100% better. Yeah.
Sorry, I had the microphone in another position. So what I was saying is that the people are all sovereign, but they get tricked into believing that that this is a lawful government.
Okay.
And by accepting it, they go ahead and do what they need to do to survive. And, you know, through licensing, the government requires you to be licensed to do this or licensed to do that, or the income tax, the GST, the HST, all of these other things, all the licensing fees and everything else is just a money grab. I mean, you pay 35% of your income towards the government that has no allegiance to you whatsoever.
But how much of that has to do with the fact that we are, I mean, even though we have conservative parties, they're not really that conservative. We are essentially kind of we tend to be more of a European-style socialist country. I mean, and that's what happens under a socialist regime. We get taxed and they spend.
That was what was cast upon us.
Yeah.
Given the opportunity to seat a de jure government through our constitution and creating our own constitution, that may not have taken place.
Right.
But even if it did take place, it would have been the will of the people, not the will of a foreign government. And the problem that we have is that they entice you in with this great, oh, look, we're giving you free health care. Oh, look, we're doing this, we're doing that for you. And slowly over time, as you can see, austerity, last government, Mr. Harper said, austerity, we must embrace austerity here in Canada. And the first thing Trudeau said when he took government, we must embrace austerity when he took government. So now they're taking away all these wonderful little perks we've had. What happens when a government starts removing the good things that make it a good country? Well, that's about control.
Right. So what does it mean then when the Prime Minister is sworn in and he pledges allegiance to the Queen? You're saying that we're not owned by the Queen. It's not a crown corporation.
Well, it is a crown corporation because it was created. The Charter of Rights and Freedoms is just that. It is a charter of a corporation that was created by the UK Parliament, and because don't forget that it's a constitutional monarchy in the United Kingdom.
Yes.
And hence it would be a crown corporation. What's interesting is this, is that the Governor General, the Prime Minister, and the Chief Justice of Canada are considered the right honorables. And what are the right honorable? Who do they have allegiance to? They are responsible for their actions to the British Crown and the British government.
Right.
This is why when sworn into their respective offices, they pledge their allegiance to a foreign monarch, Queen Elizabeth of Great Britain.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
But they have no allegiance to us.
But don't they also do that in Australia? Don't they also do that in any number of other former British colonies, now part of the Commonwealth?
Yes, they do. But we're here in Canada. I'm not in Australia. Otherwise, it would be the myth of Australia or the myth of New Zealand if I was there.
Right. But what I'm saying is it's the same situation there?
Similar, not the same.
They don't have government de jure. They have de facto governments.
It's similar to what we're going through here, but not the same.
Okay.
We were lucky. When the Statute of Westminster was created, we had a gentleman by the name of R. Rogers Smith, who was in Ottawa at the time and a good friend of Mackenzie King. And he wrote the three main clauses that applied to Canada that were in the Statute of Westminster. And Mackenzie King took those with him to London, and the English Parliament adopted them as our Roger Smith had written them. So we got very lucky in that with those clauses put in, we were basically cast at sea. In other words, the British North American Act and the British Parliament and the Queen had no more claim on Canada. And Canada was freer than Australia or New Zealand or any of the other so-called colonies, the way that they wanted to...
This is a short segment, Doug, so again, we have the music coming up. We'll take another quick timeout, come back. And I do want to get to that question about we do not have a constitution because it constitutes nothing. Let's find out about that. Doug Forrest, Nephilim Films, The Myth is Canada. Stay with us.
Poking Holes in the Darkness. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. To see the light, call Richard now at 416-360-0740. Or toll free at 1-866-740-4740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Different views make great conversation. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio. To speak with Richard live, call 416-360-0740 or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
Welcome back. Doug Force, executive producer of The Myth is Canada. We are not a lawfully established country. And the documentary is in pre-production. They are in the crowdfunding phase. Give us the details on that, Doug, how people can contribute to the production of this controversial film.
There's a donate button on the top right-hand corner, and you can go there and you can give us donations through PayPal, e-transfer. Actually, we accept Bitcoin and Ethercoin as well.
Nephilimfilms.com. Nephilim Films. Let me spell that. N-E-P-H-A-L-E-M. Nephilim, just like in the Book of Enoch and Genesis, Nephilimfilms.com. All right. I'd asked you about the Constitution. You're saying we don't have a Constitution. It constitutes nothing. So what does it – it delineates powers, though, doesn't it?
Well, what it does, it does apply to under Section 32(1), the Charter applies to A, the Parliament and Government of Canada, and B, the legislature and the government of each province. And that's all it applies to. It doesn't apply to you and I or any other Canadian person. And so how can we have a constitution that would be a law of the land, supposedly, that doesn't apply to us?
So it's the wording is been crafted as such to exclude the citizens.
Well, there are no citizens, because if it doesn't include you, how can you be a citizen of something that you're not included in?
Interesting.
If you were to claim protection under the Constitution in a court of law, it doesn't apply to you. You don't have its protection in their courts.
Not even under the Charter.
That's where that comes from. 32(1) of the Charter says very specifically it applies to the Parliament and the Government of Canada, and B, to the legislature and the government of each province.
But when an individual feels like a particular law infringes upon his or her individual rights, they can take that to court. They can go all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't that exercising, you know, our rights under the Charter?
Well, that's funny. It brings to mind, I was at the final press conference for Calmer this year, where they released the information from the Supreme Court after they fought throughout the courts here in Ontario, through the provincial Supreme Court, and then off through the federal courts and into the Supreme Court of Canada.
I'm sorry, did you say the Omar Khadr case?
The Comer.
Oh, Comer case. Oh, this is regarding the Bank of Canada Act.
Correct.
And right. I wanted to ask you about that, yeah.
Yeah, they wanted their rights under the Charter that they said, why can't we use the Bank of Canada as it was chartered for the people of Canada to issue money without interest?
Right. In other words, the government is ignoring the Bank of Canada Act. They've circumvented it ever since, I guess, Trudeau was sort of tricked into sort of hitching our wagon to the Bank of International Settlements, so that we instead of borrowing from the Bank of Canada at very low interest or zero interest, and the municipalities and provincial governments and the federal government can all do this. This is how we built the St. Lawrence Seaway. This is how we funded our war effort in the Second World War. This is how we paid for many of our social programs. That was all done away with in the early or mid-1970s. And so Rocco Galata has been representing this group all the way to the Supreme Court, arguing that the government is, you know, they're betraying the Canadian citizens because they are ignoring the Bank of Canada Act. Anyway, sorry, I needed to give it some context.
That's okay. I was going to do that anyway. And the final decision came down that he was they sued to have the politicians, to make the politicians do this. And the Supreme Court of Canada said that they weren't going to hear it because it was a political issue. And they threw it back out, which is the whole idea of the Comer case in the first place, was to get the politicians to do what they were supposed to do under the Bank of Canada Act and the Supreme Court. That's what I'm saying, is that we the people, the Constitution doesn't apply to us. If it did, the Supreme Court would have found in favor of the Comer case and said the politicians have to follow what the people say.
Interesting. I just wanted to bring one of my producers here, Ryan, because we were talking about recall earlier, and I thought it was Alberta that had recall. But Ryan, what did you find out?
Yeah, British Columbia in 91, they had a general election, and they also had a referendum where about 80% of the population of the voters voted in favor of having recalls on if they were upset, and it passed as legislation in 95, a few years later.
Okay, so would that mean then, Doug, that British Columbia now has a government du jour?
No, the recall that if you actually go read what the recall is that they created out in British Columbia, it's almost, not quite, but almost impossible to do. And they did it to placate the masses, but they made it so onerous to that it becomes almost an impossibility to fulfill a recall. As a matter of fact, a number of times it has been tried in British Columbia, and they're yet to my knowledge anyways, they're yet to ever have used it. They've tried to use it, but they've yet never actually been able to.
All right, let's grab a quick call here. William is in Toronto. Good evening, good morning, William.
I would like to ask about the notwithstanding clause in the Constitution. That means if you go against them and they don't like it, they say, no, we don't like it because of notwithstanding clause.
Right.
You don't have to give any reason.
This is parliamentary supremacy. They can
and
overrule the
Supreme Court. Have to give any reasons. So they can decide on whatever they want and without any reasons. And also, everyone has to accept the Constitution, all the provinces. Quebec has not accepted it, so we don't have one.
Excellent point. All right. What about the notwithstanding clause?
Well, and once again, now we're getting into what an attorney could tell you, and I don't hold that hat. I am not an attorney, and so I don't get into the breakdown of the law itself. Within there, I mean, there's certain clauses that we can look at that we understand, but you know, the overview on that would be then if they have that and they can do whatever they want. Once again, that Constitution doesn't apply to you.
Right. In those rare instances, the Parliament could override the Supreme Court, which you know, I'm in part I'm not opposed because we do have a very advocate. We have a Supreme Court they're advocates, right? They're not. But then you could say, well, what are they interpreting? They're interpreting the Constitution, but we don't really have a Constitution. So what does it matter?
Well, then that's just it. We go into their courts with attorneys, and the definition of an attorney is to bring the person or its property onto the state. And as soon as you hire an attorney, the court deems you incompetent. So how is that fair play?
Speaking of the Constitution, one of the things and the Charter that I know that this was, I believe, something that Harper wanted to do, and I believe the new Conservative leader has talked about it, and that is instilling property rights in the Constitution. We don't have property rights as individuals in this country, do we?
Well, we did up until 1931.
We did, okay.
And the problem that we had, okay, if you look at what the Dominion was from 1867 to 1931, most of southern Ontario sits under land patent that was issued by the Crown in England to the what they had at that time were British subjects or British citizens. And they have land patents that cover pretty much all of southern Ontario. Toronto up until, I guess it's where Front Street, beyond Front Street going down to the water, that's a reclaimed land. But the land patents is allodial title.
Which it's, means it's what? What did you call it?
Allodial title.
What does that mean?
It means that you own your property from the soles of your feet to the center of the earth, from the top of your head to the outer reaches of the atmosphere. How much better or how much of property rights do you want? You can't get a higher value of property rights other than allodial. Allodial is the highest value of property rights you can have.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. But in 1931, that all changed. Why? Because we no longer had a de jure, even though we were a colony, even though we were a dominion, but we had a de jure governance. After 1931, that ended.
Well, my understanding is that we, unless you specify, you don't own the mineral rights. In other words, you don't own what's under the soil. And in certain areas, the Ministry of Natural Resources or the Ministry of Mines or whatever it's called can come onto your property. They could trespass and they could start, you know, if, let's say they wanted to take core samples to see what's on, under the ground. They could do that. Is that true?
Yeah, but not, here's the problem, Richard, is that the property that you have today, you don't own. How can you tell you don't own it? Try not paying your property taxes. It's not your property. It doesn't belong to the de facto government, but the de facto government has created property taxes that say to you, if you don't pay these, we will come and confiscate your property. Gee whiz, how is that fair? In the United States, we'll go across the border and we see down there, they have property taxes. But it was done in favor of a government that was elected, and the people actually voted for the politicians that instituted these property taxes, and they were very specific as to what the property taxes could be for. And if you go from the various states under the de jure government, each state and each city and each municipality, et cetera, down there, they all have property taxes, but they're not all the same across every state, across every state line, et cetera, et cetera. But in the provinces of British Columbia, across all the way across Canada, they're pretty much homogenized.
Right. I'll give you an example, an illustration of that.
Vancouver.
I'll give you an illustration of that. In California, they have an initiative where they're actually thinking about if you don't have a child in public school, they will remove that portion from your property tax. I mean, I can't believe I'm saying, you know, about La La Land, California, you know, the Bolsheviks that are running things out there. But, you know, one part of me thinks, hey, that's a, you know, why should a senior that that's trying to stay in their house, that has put six kids through the school system, but also they have, you know, they've moved on now in their life, they're in another phase, why should they continue to pay into the public school system? So that illustrates your point. It's not uniform in the United States. In California, they're thinking about taking the school portion, public school portion, off the property tax. Stay with us, Doug. We're delighted you're staying with us for the full 2 hours. We'll take phone calls as well in the second hour. And I also want to talk to you about some interesting comments by our newly minted prime minister. Well, not newly minted. Some call him the boy king. A colleague down the street, a broadcaster, does, and I love it. All right, Doug Forrest, The Myth is Canada. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Live from Toronto, Canada, Earth, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio.
Thanks for inviting me into your home, long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' basement, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Howdy to all of you listening in on our flagship station, Zoomer Radio, AM 740 and 96.7 FM here in the Liberty Village neighborhood of Toronto. Hi to those of you hearing the Conspiracy Show on one of our affiliate stations across North America, the podcast, of course. Check it out at TalkZone.com. The Conspiracy Show app and the Zoomer Radio app, both free downloads. And, of course, those of you catching this program on the live YouTube stream and those of you, loyal supporters who join us every week in the live chat on YouTube, please take a moment and hit the subscribe button on our YouTube channel. We're trying to get to 10,000, and we're around, what is it, Albert, about 6,200, I think, at last count. Doug Force is with us. He is the executive producer of a documentary film in the pre-production stage. It's called The Myth is Canada, with a very fascinating, controversial premise, and that is Canada is not what you think. It's a myth, as the name implies. We are not a lawfully enacted country. We do not have a constitution ratified by the people. We don't have a government for the people, a government du jour. We have de facto governments that basically can do whatever they want without any accountability. That won't come as news to most people. But what underlies that, the mechanism by that allows for this tyranny, I suppose, is what this film exposes. The Myth is Canada. And if you want to take part and help bring this movie to the screen, you can go to NephilimFilms.com, and they are running a crowdfunding effort, and there's a donate button. So go to Nephilim Films, NePHALEM Films.com, and help them out. Doug Force, again, executive producer, writer, researcher, and director. Can I ask how much you're trying to raise in this crowdfunding?
We're looking to raise $500,000 Canadian, and that would put us into theaters for next September. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be done. The money will be spent creating this movie.
Sure.
And so that's what we're looking to do.
That's pretty. People think that's a lot of money, and it is certainly. But to make a high quality, full length feature, you're doing it not on the cheap, but it's going to be all the money, as you say, is going to be poured into what we see on the screen is going to be reflected by the donations. So.
Oh, absolutely.
So have you interviewed any former governors general or lieutenant governors?
Yeah. Not at this time,
no.
Richard. We gave it our focus to getting the word out, first of all, for what we're doing. And secondly, we're really pushing to get the crowdfunding done.
Right.
I don't want to start doing interviews with these people by tipping our hand too quickly.
Right.
As to what's coming.
But no doubt, in part of your research, you've talked to constitutional attorneys?
I have indeed.
Yeah. And what do they make of this premise? Does some scoff at it? Does some agree to it?
Every single one of them said, no, you're crazy. That can't be.
Every single one.
Every single one. But don't forget, they make their living making sure that we don't find out the truth. I had a wonderful meeting, friend of a friend. He's an extremely well-known attorney here in Ontario. He's a litigating attorney, and I sat down with him one afternoon, and we had a chat about what we were doing. And he laughed and laughed, and I said, "I'd love to have you, love to put you on camera, and love to ask you a few questions." And he went very pale at that point, mm-hmm. and said, "No."
I can think of one attorney who probably is totally on side, because you mentioned the Comer case, and this was to do with the Bank of Canada Act, and we've had Rocco Galati on this program. I had him on Coast to Coast, mm-hmm. caused quite a stir there. If you've talked to Rocco Galati, what does he make of this?
Well, I had mentioned only in passing to Rocco, and I suggested that because we were at the press conference, the last press conference they had for Comer, and I suggested that at some point in the not too distant future, if he would be interested to sit down on camera and we could do an interview, he gave me his card and said, "Give me a call." So I will be doing that.
Right. Any politicians, former MPs that you've talked to? For example, someone you mentioned the Comer case. So let's talk about the Honorable Paul Hellyer. What does he make of this? If you've talked to him.
I actually never mentioned the myth as candidate to him. I did actually go see him speak earlier this year. Very interesting because he was there to talk about the Bank of Canada, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I did go up and I congratulated him for that, but I never did mention the myth at that time, simply because there were so many other people around that he was busy. He's 93 years old as well.
Indeed. But still sharp as a whip. Remarkable.
Indeed, he is, and he is definitely somebody that we would like to speak with, and I do have a contact that can get us there for that. So,
I mentioned some interesting things that our current Prime Minister has said, he referred to Canada. You probably heard this as the first post-nation state. Basically meaning, we are, Canadians like to, young millennials, like, oh, we're citizens of the world. And we're, this is an admission from an out-and-out globalist. And I don't have a lot of time for globalists. I think, if you don't buy into the idea of a nation state, I have a serious problem with you. I'm not one of these one-worlders who doesn't believe in borders. These open, no border people, and that's sort of George Soros' whole game, no borders. Mm-hmm. It drives me insane. It's traitorous.
Well, let me respond to that by saying I'm going to talk about the three elements of sovereignty and to show you just what it is to have a de jure government. So the three elements of sovereignty are land under your feet, the ability to raise a military, and the ability to issue your own currency.
Right, correct.
So in Ottawa, the parliament buildings sit on land, but who owns the land?
Who owns that land?
Well, the land is under dispute. The Algonquin Indians and the province of Ontario own that land.
All right.
Where it's under dispute between the province of Ontario and the Algonquin Indians. But the province of Ontario collects $2.7 million a year in rent from the federal authority every year. So when Mr. Trudeau says that we are not a nation state, he isn't lying. We're not.
Right. But I think what he meant, he was telling the truth, but he was also, meaning it, we are a post-nation state, meaning, we're not, another term that gets thrown around a lot these days is enlightened sovereignty, which basically means, well, we're globalists, we don't believe in the nation state, but we're not going to tell you that. So it's the old gradualist strategy, incrementalism. We'll start referring to it as enlightened sovereignty, because enlightened sovereignty leads ultimately to, no sovereignty.
Well, and do you know where sovereignty comes from, Richard?
The sovereign, the crown.
No.
No?
Sovereignty comes from Genesis chapter 1, verse 26.
Ah.
And God created man, and God created man in his own image. And God gave man dominion over the earth. Mm. All that creepeth on its surface, flieth in its skies, swimmeth in its ocean. What's dominion? What is meant by dominion?
All land under God, I guess?
No. If we have dominion, we are the highest authority on planet Earth.
Right. Right. Okay.
And we are given that by God. But
right.
Because we are finite beings, we live. We're born and then we die. So what has he endowed us with? He has endowed us with unalienable rights.
Correct. Which we've sort of totally lost in this country.
What are rights? They're the rights of a sovereign.
That's right. Right.
They
can't be.
Sovereign.
They weren't created by man, and they can't be
taken.
Yeah.
The only entity in the universe that can take that away from us is God himself.
That's right. And that's the problem we have in this country, and you see it and hear it everywhere, where people refer to everything that we have as a privilege, and not understanding that privileges are created by man, they could be taken away by man. And this, to me, is a very scary idea. So when you remove a creator out of the equation, There are no more inalienable rights. There are just privileges. So we exist at the behest of governments, which is just...
De facto government, not de jure.
Right.
Once again, and when people say government, then people lose what really it is, and it isn't. De facto government isn't. De jure government is.
All right, let's grab a phone call. Our good friend, media scientist Nelson Thal, who will be on the program next week, is joining the conversation. Nelson, welcome. How are you, my friend?
Thanks, Rich. Very good. It's a great topic, and we've always said Canada's a colony, certainly of the British Crown, and they owned all the land here, is what we always said.
But Doug is disputing that. We're no longer a colony. We're just sort of Well, you explain, Doug. I'm not going to put words in your mouth.
Well, the thing is, every peace officer still takes an oath to Her Majesty in the Privy Council. Mike Pitfield was the one who, on behalf of Her Majesty, in effect, ran our government. And remember, the Queen's prorogued Parliament, so they can't do business without her approval.
All right, Doug, respond.
Because it's her corporation. Don't forget, it is a Crown corporation. Let me read you something very quickly here. From the Statute of Westminster, Section 11 of the statute raises each province of Canada from a position of colony to that of a sovereign state. Section 11 is as follows. The meaning of colony in future acts, notwithstanding anything in the Interpretations Act 1889, the expression colony shall not, in any act of Parliament of the United Kingdom passed after the commencement of this act, being the Statute of Westminster, include a dominion or any province or state forming any part of a dominion.
All right, we'll allow that to resonate. Nelson, I got it.
Everybody takes an oath to the Queen.
That's
from
true.
The Privy Council down, and that means they obey her. She.
All right, Nelson and Doug, hold on. We'll take a time out. We'll come back. Nelson, hold on, and we'll continue this conversation. On the other side, the myth is Canada.
Question everything. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Shaking the world and seeing what falls. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Programming note. Next week on this transmission, Billy Carson will be here to talk about the secret space program. Also, Nelson Thal, media scientist, will be here to talk about synthetic clones and doubles. Some speculation that the First Lady, Melania Trump, what we're seeing, or the person that we're seeing on news clips and so forth, could be a synthetic clone or a double. Coincidentally, Nelson Thal is on the line with us right now as we continue to converse with executive producer, independent filmmaker Doug Force about his new project, The Myth is Canada. So, Nelson, you were talking to Doug, you're asking Doug, stating your case that we are a colony. And so now I've gone and confused myself again, Doug. Are we a colony or are we a corporation or are we both?
Well, we are a sovereign peoples on a landmass known as Canada. And the corporation that was done in 1982 is de facto governance over us at this time through our consent. And I'll ask the gentleman this. I said, yes, the police, yes, the politicians, they all swear allegiance to the Queen. But where is the documentation that shows that we, the people of Canada, have given our sovereignty over to her?
And you're saying it doesn't exist?
Correct. Does not exist.
Okay. But she still owns everything, doesn't she?
Nope.
No? Okay.
Well, she owns it because she's de facto at this time. We see de jure government. They can't stand, and hence, where does the ownership come? It comes back to who actually belongs to us.
All right. Nelson, did you want to respond to that?
But, Doug, for laws to get made, and it can't be made without her consent. And if we want to put through some laws that aren't going to gain her consent, you can't sue her in the courts here. You can't sue her in the courts. So she's above the law. There's no doubt about it. It's not a matter of debatable interpretation. Right now, she's above the law. You can't go into a court in Canada and sue the Queen.
Here's the problem that you're going through, Malcolm. Is that
it's Nelson
inside the box, yeah. And I'm talking about what's going on outside the box. When you create a constitution for a de jure government, you're not standing in the box. You're not asking permission of a de facto government to create a de jure government. You're actually going ahead and creating a de jure government to the detriment of that de facto government. They can't do anything.
Doug, have you seen the Yes Prime Minister? Have you seen Humphrey there? And
yes,
the control through the Privy Council, through the law societies, and through et cetera, the Privy Councils, Her Majesty's Privy Councils. The lines of power are, for people who are power scientists, the lines of power and force are right there. You can see it.
Well, I don't think Doug is, forgive me, Doug, but just to sort of expedite things, I don't think you're disagreeing with Nelson in principle, but you're saying that power that they have is de facto, it's not de jure, and we can quickly reverse that if we wanted to.
Correct. That's absolutely correct, and Malcolm, what you are saying, you're standing inside the box. That's what I'm saying, and what I'm saying is we stand outside the box. We don't need to ask their permission. As a matter of fact, we are the sovereigns. They at best need to ask our permission. And by the way, if you ever go to court or you ever get pulled over, you get asked by a police officer, what's the first thing they ask you for? Your permission. How are they doing that? They're asking for your name. They need your consent to proceed against you. If they didn't, if it was de jure, they could simply put you in handcuffs and take you to jail, could they not?
Interesting.
Well, they do that.
Yeah, if you don't present identification, they can charge you with vagrancy, can't they?
Well, and then once again, they go to court.
Doug, they went into my house without a search permit and just arrested me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the whole idea, though, is that you've consented to their jurisdiction at some point in order for them to proceed against you. When you showed up in court, just by showing up,
aren't we mincing words? The power of the crown is enormous. She's above the law, and she can do what she likes. You don't want to get in her way.
Only if you consent to her. That's the only way that she can proceed against you. They can't proceed against you through non-consent. And then it goes on and on.
I wouldn't advise anyone to try and test that theory, though, Doug. I wouldn't advise anyone to try and test that theory.
Doug, do you live in Canada?
I do.
Oh, okay.
Many years.
All right, Nelson, before I let you go, just to give us a quick tease, you're coming on the program next week to talk about synthetic clones and doubles and so forth.
Yes, I mean, the use of doubles is an old-fashioned thing now, and, of course, technology is used to do it. Many of the great men in through history had doubles, and Churchill had a double. Bruce West wrote a book about it, a Toronto Star journalist. So they've all got doubles, and the technology's there. We're going to talk about what technologies are available to them and what they're doing right now with that technology.
Excellent. Nelson, looking forward to it. Thank you, my friend.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
All right. Let's see now. I've lost my screener here temporarily. Is that a different William on line one? He was with us earlier, wasn't he? No, this is a different William. All right, William, welcome.
Good morning, if it's okay with you.
Sorry?
It's the same William, if I can proceed.
It's not a different one. It's the same one. I think one call per show, William. I apologize, but
okay,
I think
next time, thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, thank you. All right, so let's get into, Doug, about how we can get rid of a de facto government or the system of de facto governments and get back to government de jure as it was prior to 1931, correct?
Well, prior to 1931, we were a colony. We were a sovereign, but we had our sovereignty allegiance to the Queen at that time because we were all British subjects.
Right, okay. But isn't that better than where we're at now?
We had sovereignty with her.
Isn't that better than where we're at now?
Where we're at now is we're in a wonderful position because we are not sharing our sovereignty with anybody. We are the sovereigns, and we can create a sovereign de jure government.
Okay, how do we do that? Let's start with provincially.
That's, funny enough, we're going to teach that in the film, but in a simplified version, you really just hold constitutional convention. And what I suggest that we'll be doing in the film is that we do it in a grassroots level so that a neighborhood could get together and hold a constitutional convention on one street and then the next street and the next street. They will all hold their own constitutional convention. And then they'll get together as a neighborhood and create a constitution that they'll take to the next neighborhood. And it builds from there. And it really becomes a groundswell where you'd think, oh, it's going to take forever to do that. Actually, once it starts, it's like a grass fire in the prairie in the middle of summer. Once it starts, it just continues to grow at an enormously fast rate. And the next thing you know, the province is voting for a constitution to see that it is your government. At which point, if it passes, you have a de jure government to be elected.
When you say if it passes by whom? The legislature?
Oh, no, the people of the province. So the constitutional committee that will create, that would take the constitutions from all the various neighborhoods into the various cities, into the various towns, into the various municipalities, will refine all of that down to a singular constitution that will go to vote for the will of the people across that province. And it depends on what the constitution will say as what would be the majority vote. You could have it a 50% majority vote, you could have it a 75% majority vote like they do in the U.S., or you could have it at 100% majority vote if you so choose. Once that majority is reached, the Constitution stands in law. Now you have what they call law of the land, rather than law of the sea admiralty, which we have today.
But who's going to recognize that?
We the people.
All right, but what if the de facto government ignores it, which I would be inclined to think would happen? They would say, well, we don't recognize that.
That's fine. They're allowed to not recognize what we have, because don't forget that the police that the de facto government used to have on their side helped us create, because they were participants within the constitutional creation. So those same police officers can be brought under the de jure government and have the de facto government arrested if it decides not to go gently into that good night.
It's a wonderful fantasy, but isn't it just that? I mean, how is that
Stranger
practical?
Things have happened. Do you, yeah. You recall in 1776 there were the 13 crazy little colonies in the United that were going to become the United States of America,
right?
And they decided to take on the largest empire in the world at that time.
So,
but only 3% of them decided to take it on, and they beat them.
Right.
And
that was a revolution,
was a wild,
though. That
crazy
was a
fantasy.
That was revolution, though. I mean, you're not advocating revolution, are you?
I'm not advocating that the gun, do you have to take out the gun? I'm saying that the actual pen here in Canada is much mightier than any sword could ever possibly be.
Hmm. Here's the other problem, though.
John F. Kennedy that said, if you can't have peaceful revolution, you'll definitely have a bloody revolution.
Right, right. But I don't know. I don't sense the mood for that in this country because, you know, we may not be a country, but most people, I mean, there's some problems in this country. There are some issues, but most people, by and large, are pretty well off, pretty comfortable.
Really?
The system works for most people, doesn't it?
You'd be surprised, Richard, the amount of people that have been contacting me through this process, and I just thought, you know, okay, we'll get one or two. We're getting literally avalanches of people going, finally, somebody is standing up to say something. There's definitely something wrong. And people from, you know, doesn't matter what walk of life they're in. My bank teller I gave her the information for go check us out. Not only did she, next time I go to the bank, she said, not only did I check you out, but I gave it to my mom, my dad, my brothers, and they've all gone on. And so it's catching on that we know there's something wrong here in Canada. And now with the myth, is Canada coming out the way it's coming out, people are going to be able to say, oh, that's what's wrong. And there's a peaceful way to take it all back.
Well, I'm overjoyed to hear that. I mean, I'm very hopeful. You know, all right. Well, this is certainly would be my wish, because I agree there is something wrong. I guess the way that I interpret what's wrong is I just think that we have globalists in charge of this country. Where, you know, that this whole populist movement, and I don't think it's going to die. And love or hate Trump, he's a manifestation of that. We also have a populist movement pushing back now in Europe, in places like Poland. In Hungary, in the Czech Republic, that recently passed their own Second Amendment. Can you believe that? And also certainly in the opposition in places like Holland, there is a populist uprising. There is a populist mood sweeping the globe, but it seems to have entirely bypassed our country because we are a post-nation state, apparently.
Well, and it hasn't bypassed. The conservative people are very conservative, as you know, and the liberals are, the liberal people are very vocal, and they go out and they march. But the conservatives stay at home, and they tend to their garden, and they, you know, change the oil on their car. But they all know, and don't forget, that as it progresses down this road, what's coming, and what started in 2008 with the collapse of the Federal Reserve note denominated as the U.S. dollar, is now coming to its fruition. And the global stage is being set for that to lose its reserve status. And when it does, it will reach its intrinsic value of zero. And people will then go through a time of suffering and chaos if they're not careful. What we're delivering here is the message of how to, instead of having the globalists, as you call them, come in and go, oh, it's chaos, we have a way to fix that, but you're going to have to enslave yourselves to us in perpetuity, and your children and your children's children and your children's children, but we're going to feed you. It's not going to be good food, but we'll feed you.
Yes, Soylent Green. Listen, I got to take a time out, Doug.
It's not going to be a house or anything, but it'll be a tarp and a couple pieces of string and a couple of poles.
Exactly. Listen, I got to take a time out. We'll come back, and I will also take some phone calls. Doug Force, The Myth is Canada. What say you? Back with more in a moment. Stay with us.
The truth will set you free, but first, it will really tick you off. You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Don't be afraid of the dark. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio. To talk to Richard, call 416-360-0740 or toll free 1-866-740-4740.
The Myth is Canada. I got to tell you what, I'm very anxious to see this on the big screen. And it's not ready yet. It's they're in the pre-production stages of making this feature-length documentary. When I say they, I mean the folks at NephilimFilms.com, and they are in the crowdfunding phase. Talk about a grassroots effort. You can help get this movie made and expose the myth that is Canada. The good news is Doug Force, executive producer, is here to tell us how we can move from de facto governments across Canada, which is what we have, to governments du jour. Now, this would take, again, a tremendous grassroots movement, and that is constitutional conventions, sort of block by block, neighborhood by neighborhood, city by city, county by county, province by province. He says, while it may sound fantastical, remember, go harken back to 1776, and a collection of small colonies took on the greatest empire in the world and won. He's not suggesting that this would be achieved with a bloody revolution. He's saying it can all be done with the mighty pen. Let's grab a call here for Doug Force. Lisa is in Woodstock. Lisa, good morning. Welcome to The Conspiracy Show.
Oh, hi, Richard. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Richard, I had three questions, actually, for you and your guest.
All right.
The first question was a follow-up on what Nelson Fall asked, actually, and he didn't follow it up. And that is, for your guest, is actually a Canadian citizen.
Doug, are you
a Canadian citizen?
Citizen? Yes.
Yes, I have to have citizenship because I have a passport. I do a lot of traveling for my work. So, yes.
You have a Canadian passport?
I do.
Okay.
Did you have another question?
Yeah, I'll just give you the second question. The second question is your guest not actually promoting what I would call sedition, which is the incitement of resistance or insurrection against an unlawful authority?
Is what I'm doing sedition?
Sedition.
And they could look at it as sedition, but they are also de facto unlawful and illegal. What I'm actually suggesting is very simple. Let's seat a de jure government and get rid of these unlawful and illegal de facto governance. Yes. And if that's sedition against the unlawful and illegal government, then my crime of sedition is there.
You know, city by city and street by street, resistance, if you will, against the government. To me, that's sufficient.
Well, he's talking about resistance. No, he's not talking about resistance. He's talking about a constitutional convention.
Correct. To just simply create a constitution that seats a de jure government. I'm not saying that you should go up and grab a gun and resist the government that you have today. That will get you nowhere. It will get you dead very quickly if you were to try that, or if you were to try to undermine them in any way. That would also get
let's be clear about this. Doug has at no time has he ever suggested anything of the sort, Lisa. He is talking about organizing ourselves into small groups and creating a grassroots constitution, one that would be sort of, you know, welcomed by. At a provincial level eventually, you know, that it would start at the street level. It would start a few houses at a time and then it would move, you know, to the neighborhoods and then eventually across the city and so forth.
And how would you propose to get this enacted as a country?
Well, here's the thing. We have all the provinces are already sovereign nations without de jure governments. And with by seating a de jure government within the provinces, then each province, the province of British Columbia, will become the sovereign nation of British Columbia. The province of Ontario would become the sovereign nation of Ontario. At which point, at that point, they can all come together, if they so choose, and hold a constitutional convention to create a federal authority that could be called Canada. But that's up to the will
of
the people.
If you are going to draft these constitutions, right?
I'm not drafting them, my dear.
And the government decides that this is not a good thing for the country, and they pass legislation that outlaws you doing that, how are you going to stop that?
I'm not drafting a single constitution.
No, I know you're not. You're suggesting people do it in your your movie. I'm just saying if people are drafting these constitutions, city by city and so on, and the government finds out that they're doing this, and the government decides to pass legislation making it illegal, how are you going to stop that?
Well, I'm not going to stop anything.
I'm talking about the people that you're suggesting should do this.
No. It would be the will of the people that would stop that. If suddenly the government says you cannot form a de jure government that is through your will, what do you think 32 million people in Canada would do to half a dozen, maybe 40 or 50 politicians? What do you think would happen to them? 32 million people are told they can't have their sovereignty because they are creating these laws that says you can't do that.
All right, let me just jump in because I've got to take a break here, but we'll come back and we'll continue that conversation.
Richard, I'll continue to listen.
Thank you, Lisa. Lisa in Woodstock. We'll continue to discuss The Myth is Canada. Doug Force from Nephilim Films. Check it out, nephilimfilms.com. Back with more in a moment.
When in doubt, blame the government. You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. When you look at the sky, ever wonder if someone's looking back? This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Doug Forrest stays with us till the very end, the bitter end, and we'll dim the lights and say goodnight till next week. But just to further to Lisa's point from Woodstock, and I had raised this earlier with you, Doug, what happens if the de facto government doesn't recognize this grassroots constitutional convention that creates a government de jure? And just to sort of, again, expedite things, I think your point was, well, listen, if everyone's on board, everyone would include members of the military, members of the police, perhaps even members of, you know, the judiciary, other, you know, other politicians that wake up to the fact that we are living under de facto governments, not governments de jure. So the only people left on the other side representing the de facto government would be, you know, the elected, the members of parliament. They would have, you know, they would have no underpinning. Is that pretty much?
That's pretty much it. I mean, once you go into the process, it would be absolutely dead foolish for them to say that you can't create a constitutional government, because it would expose that to the people that were sidelined sitting going, well, I don't really want to get involved. Now suddenly the federal authority says you can't do that.
Right. The big obstacle to this, the big obstacle is making, is waking people up to and making them understand what the difference is between de facto and de jure, I think.
The myth is Canada.
Right. There you go. All right. Let's say hi to Grant, who's out in British Columbia. Good morning, Grant. Welcome to The Conspiracy Show.
Good evening. Yes, I just wanted to make a few comments about some of the people who have been calling in regarding, you know, this fear they seem to have with authority. And this authority, as Doug says, comes from these de facto governments, which we have basically allowed to control our lives. I mean, we are the sovereign. Doug, you've talked about this. We are the sovereign. God created us. He put us on this planet and gave us all these rights. And if we don't exercise those rights, then obviously somebody's going to come along and take them away from us. So with what you're saying, and I fully understand what you're doing because I've been involved in a lot of this research myself too, is that people have to start thinking about who is the sovereign here. We, you know, this, you know, we are the sovereign. This body we have that we walk around and that's been given to us by our Creator. You know, we have these rights, and nobody can take them away without our informed consent. And this is what we've done in the past, is we've given away our consent and made ourselves subservient to these powers.
Well, this is part of the, this is part of, I believe, the deception and the conspiracy, if you will, to drive God from the public square. It's because when you remove the Creator, then you destroy the concept of inalienable rights. Most, if you talk to millennials, they don't even understand the concept of inalienable rights because they don't even know God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, Grant, thank you for that. Tony's in Toronto. Let's work Tony in. Good morning, Tony. Welcome to The Conspiracy Show.
Yeah, good morning. Very interested program, but I'm 100% with Doug, because I always said, like, from, for example, getting your citizenship, you're making, you're swearing allegiance to even her grandkids. That's not even there yet.
Right, swearing allegiance to the Queen and her heirs, yes. That's
why are we swearing allegiance to some people across the pond in the UK? That's ridiculous. So I'm 100% with what Doug suggests. Thanks,
well,
guys.
We, the people, aren't actually giving the Queen any allegiance at all. It's her governance, or the government, that we elect. Here's the funny thing. We are allowed to elect those people, but they don't represent us whatsoever in what we do here. And, of course, you could see on YouTube Mr. Justin Trudeau swearing allegiance to the Queen and her hair.
He's a puppet. I don't like the guy. I know his dad very, very well as a teenager, when I was, even before I was a teenager. But he's a puppet. I don't like him. No, I don't.
I don't think a lot of people do, unless you're a liberal. But here's
I'm a liberal.
Yeah,
right. Thank you for the admission, Tony. Go ahead, Doug.
Yes. I was going to say, in 1893, there was a little law, a statute law revision act that was created by the UK Parliament that removed the Section 2 of the British North American Act, and it came into Section 2 was the monarch of Canada, were heirs and in perpetuity, was removed from the British North American Act. And in 1901, when Queen Victoria died, she was the last queen or monarch for Canada. Now, the English Parliament between 1901 and 1931 never reenacted that clause, and after 1931, it was the British North American Act was null and void, and they had no claim to enact anything at that point in Canada at all. And to this day,
and you know, one of the things you said that's very important that people don't think about: we never get a chance to vote on the Constitution before it takes over our life,
because it has nothing to do with you. It's not your Constitution.
Right. In other words, it was not...
It wasn't for us. It was just for the puppet them in Ottawa.
Right. It was not voted on by the people.
That's why I agree with you. Because I was in high school, I was one of those students who write essay what the Constitution means.
In 32.1A and B, it's very clear that the Charter applies only to the federal authority and to the provincial authority. That's the government.
That's what I told my children and my friends.
All right, Tony, great hearing from you.
Thanks for
checking in. I hope you'll call again. So let's in the time that remains, Doug, let's talk about again how we get this movie made. I mean, in addition to making the movie, because I think, you know, obviously it's important to make the movie. I think if it ever gets to the big screen, and I sincerely hope that it does, I think it'll make a huge splash. But don't we have to go further than that? I mean, we're talking about really changing people's entire reality and their whole perspective, which is a very difficult thing to do. I mean, what else? I mean, is there another way in addition to the movie of educating people about this?
Well, we are going to, as we progress with the movie itself, we're having a companion website or an interactive website built with the movie that will have webinars that will be running during the post-production of the movie itself. And then after the movie is released, we'll continue to run webinars. There'll be PDF documentation up there on teaching people, A, what is a constitution? B, what is a constitutional convention? C, what is a de jure versus a de facto government?
Right.
All downloadable. We're going to have boilerplate constitutions up there so people can actually download them and fill in the blanks. And if they don't know what to put in the blanks, we'll have a PDF documentation of all the various ideas that you can actually put into a constitution to create a de jure government. So it really, really is very hands-on what we're looking at doing. It's not just the movie.
What about the idea of helping communities to organize to elect their constitutional delegates?
The explanation on how to do these things, it will be in there. We'll hold webinars and teaching people how to do that. But to actually come into the communities, unless invited, I'd be delighted to do that if I was invited to do that. I wouldn't just show up and start preaching from the town square, that's for sure.
No. I'm saying, you know, giving people instructions on how they could organize themselves. What about something a little more frequent and interactive? I know I'm giving you lots of ideas and making more work for you, but as if a film isn't enough, it's a huge undertaking. But I'm just trying to think about, what about like a weekly podcast or a weekly, some sort of a podcast where because those things, you know how viral they can go, and podcasting is getting ready to explode. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I'm getting a lot of invites to get on. I was on Hugh Riley's Liquid Lunch last week.
Yes.
And by the way, Hugh says to say hello to you now that I'm on the air.
He's doing great stuff. Yes, please say hi to Hugh.
Thatchannel.com. And he has me back on this Wednesday on Liquid Lunch again for another, and he wants to do an hour this time this Wednesday. I've had invitations from across Canada now. Three different radio stations have invited me to come on and do time for them. I know that as that gets further and further out, it's going to increase a lot from that. And once we get the movie into post-production and we're able to start running webinars on the interactive website and taking that into distribution from there, then we do expect it to go viral at that point. And webinars are a great tool because they're interactive.
True.
So you're not just preaching through a podcast of what's happening, but you're actually taking in questions immediately. And you're explaining, and you can have your documentation up there through PowerPoint documentation, and actually teach people how to do what it is that they need to do in real time.
I think it's fabulous. I think you're doing the Lord's work here, and I fully get behind it in any way I can. Let me ask you just a couple of minutes here. But let's say, for example, you wanted to educate a sitting member of parliament or a member of provincial parliament and wake them up as to what's going on. What would you let's, you know, give them the elevator pitch to explain to them why they are essentially, I don't know, living a lie. If I don't know how else to put that delicately. Well, give them the elevator pitch to explain to them what's going on.
Well, and I have spoke to politicians in the past, and they're not the brightest. They're not the sharpest tools in the shed, let's put it that way. So you have to kind of be a little forceful with them. And I would suggest to them that door number one is the door to the gallows. Door number two is the door to freedom and a de jure government. It's your choice.
Wow. that's pretty direct, I'd say.
And have you ever spoken to a politician?
You know what? Listen, I want to be kind. There are some very bright politicians.
Oh, yeah,
a lot of them
are
lawyers. They're very sharp minds. But I guess what we're saying is, you know, to try and, you know, it's like trying to wake people up who are in a deep, deep sleep. And some people just don't want to be woken up. You know, what did Jesus say? Let the dead bury the dead. Some people just don't want to have their eyes open because they're very comfortable in their well-appointed cages.
You know, Richard, that's fine, and there's nothing wrong with that. They don't have to participate, because what happens to those that don't participate, the world passes them by, and they're not going to be a party to what's coming. And that's fine. That's their choice. It's not, I can't force that old adage, take a horse to water, you can't make them drink it.
True. Well, I wish you nothing but success with this project. Again, how can people donate to the crowdfunding campaign to make this documentary, The Myth is Canada, come into reality?
Well, nephilimfilms.com, NEPHALEM, films.com. On the opening page, there's a donation tab in the upper right-hand corner. You press that, and you can donate through PayPal, through e-transfer, through cryptocurrency. We take Ether and Bitcoin. And also, if you have a credit card and you want to go on Indiegogo, we have set up on Indiegogo where we actually have perks that you can actually get, T-shirts, hats, water bottles, etc., for your donation through Indiegogo.
Again, it's nephilimfilms.com, NEPHALEM, nephilimfilms.com. Doug, thank you so much for the last 2 hours. All the best. We'll talk again. And again, I'm all in.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate you having me on your show yet again.
All right. Doug Force, The Myth is Canada. My thanks to Ian and Albert and the other guy, Ryan. Senior moment. Sorry about that. And North, doing a fantastic job in the control room there. Back next week, Billy Carson, Nelson Thal. Hope you'll be along for that. In the meantime, don't be afraid. There's nothing concealed that won't be revealed, nothing hidden that won't be made known. What you hear in the dark, speak in the light. What I say in a whisper, proclaim from the housetops. Move over, Aphrodite. I'm coming home. Good night.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.